Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another in my ongoing series, The News in Review, a chance to sit down one-on-one with some of the finest minds on the planet. From Youngstown, Ohio, we have author, activist, and teacher, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Simon, thanks for that awesome, that's just too nice a thing to say about me, the other panelist, yes. It's a pleasure to be here after a long holiday weekend and the first week of school, and the NFL kicked off, and I know we'll be talking about anything but that today.
Oh, no, the NFL is definitely on the list. I think there's several delightful stories to discuss. And from New Jersey, my good friend Bill Conrad. Bill, you're back from vacation. Are you raring to go?
Yes, I'm looking forward to today's show. And I didn't realize that I was one of the finest minds on the planet. If you'd care to take some time and write my wife a letter proving that, that would be a great favor to me.
Right. that would get you a few brownie points.
Oh, I hope so.
Okay, let's kick off with, I'm sorry about the NFL connotation there. Let's kick off with Vlad the Peacemaker. Now, Sam, what do you make about this uneasy truce that's being called in Ukraine?
I think it's the key word you used was uneasy, because as of today, there's still sporadic gunfire and shelling going on. So will it hold? I guess it's the big key. I don't know where the negotiations are going on. What are the negotiations? Obviously, the Russian separatists, or the rebels, or whatever they want to be called, they want the eastern part of Ukraine to be part of Russia. I mean, they want, and Ukraine doesn't want to let them go. So I don't know what's the mutual ground that they both can claim victory on and move on for this. That I do not know. I don't see it holding. No, I think these people are just, for some bizarre reason,
No, I don't see it holding either.
I just don't see it.
Right. I was reading some hot off the wire news stuff, and there's shelling going on. Ukrainian woman was killed, a civilian. It's just not. It's not going to hold. I mean, it's obvious what Vlad wants, and he needs that land bridge to Crimea. And the way he can get it is by holding or annexing the eastern part of Ukraine. And he seems to have done it.
Yeah.
Bill, any thoughts on Ukraine?
One of the things I was looking into was to finding out what kind of event was going on, whether there was a big sporting event on Saturday where they really needed some time away from all this trouble, and that it was just kind of smoke and mirrors where we stop it because there's some kind of event taking place up there in Moscow that he just didn't want to be bothered with what's going on in Ukraine. But I haven't found anything yet. Is one of my missions for the week.
I do believe that we might have Dr. Gary Penn on the line.
I am tardy, but I have a note from my doctor, which is myself.
listeners. This is Dr. Gary Penn, a well-known psychologist from the L.A. area. I didn't know doctors were allowed to treat themselves.
Well, I don't know. It's just kind of like going in circles sometimes.
Right. We were talking about what's going on in Ukraine and the uneasy ceasefire that seems to have kind of sort of happened, even though people are still dying. Do you have any thoughts on the subject?
Simon, I really wish I did. I think this is my instinct on this is let Russians and the Europeans work it out. I'm still scratching my head. I listen to a lot of really people that I respect and I think are, you know, kind of know what's going on, and they say it just has to be stopped and all these things. And maybe, I mean, if Russia wants to do this and they want to take over, let them do it. I'm just not feeling this great deal of urgency, and I'm not saying that's the right policy. Maybe if I had more information, I'd kind of know what's going on better.
Sam, I've come to the conclusion that you and I both got into the wrong industries. The big money today is being a cartographer, because maps seem to get redrawn every week.
Yeah, like the hourly map of what ISIS controls or doesn't control is a pretty interesting one too. But Gary brings up a good point. Do you want to get involved? But you know, something forced Putin's hand to try to get his guys to play nice, and I think that was NATO finally coming together, and maybe economic sanctions are working. You know, maybe some people are screaming bloody, you know about their economy there, and you know this and that. But I don't know. You know what I mean? So I mean, something obviously happened. So to do that, and the Ukrainians, I don't know what they've got. Again, I don't know what they're negotiating. I mean, what are the Ukrainians going to get? They don't want that part of the country to leave, and that part wants to leave. I don't know what the middle ground is. You know, what will it be? So that's going to be the interesting thing. You know, maybe they'll say, okay, you can leave, and we don't have to pay a gas bill or something like that. That's about all I can see happening. But I do think that NATO finally playing tough for Putin to the table.
I'm not so sure about that, but I guess time will tell. Bill, do you think NATO poses a threat to Vlad the peacemaker?
No, I don't think they're any kind of concern for him. I think he's got the economic problems with the boycotts. I think that's, if anything, that's going to affect them more than NATO. I don't think it's going to happen. You know, NATO isn't going to be the one to fix it.
I think by just sitting down and they're going to tighten those economic sanctions. You know, we don't know what type of effect they were having in Russia, but it had to be having something. You know, food. You know, the food was getting cut off, and you know, and things of that. That's what I believe did it. I don't. You know, still they're still fighting. I mean, it's there's still, you know, shelling going on and all that sort of stuff. So,
okay, sanctions. This is potentially a double-edged sword. If you lean on Putin too much, he can turn off the gas pipe to Europe, and that would be an economic disaster.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And they realized that, too. I think they've been hoarding oil and natural gas and stuff like that in reserves because they were afraid of that happening. And that was one reason why our gas prices went up earlier in the summer, if you recall, because we ship a lot of our oil to Europe for just exactly what you just said, Simon. And steadily, and then as the situation eased, our prices have come down a little. Although, Bill, when I was in your neck of the woods on Labor Day weekend, gas was, it's $3.22 a gallon here in Ohio. It was almost $3.52 when we were in New Jersey, when we got gas in New Jersey on off the turnpike.
Ouch. I'm really glad I don't have a car.
Yeah, so that was, that. But I think that part of the thing, not the Putin thing. I also, also there's not, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe ISIS started to threaten Russia too, or Chechnyans or something happened there right around over Labor Day weekend too, that maybe Putin had to think about, I may be facing another, I may be facing a radical Muslim front as I did, six years ago in Chechnya. Remember all that craziness that was going on. So, there's a lot of other cards out there that we know we're not aware of. But
yeah, that's a distinct possibility. Most of the Muslim world, though, is fairly peaceful. If you look at Indonesia, they don't cause any trouble. They're not interested in lopping people's heads off. Yeah, they just do what they do.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think we all agree with that. That it's not everyone, but take 80,000 of them running around doing that. Simon, I just early in the week in your home country, some 82-year-old woman in she'd been living in a little villa, I forget where it was, outside of London or something. She got beheaded in her garden by some Muslim, and the Muslims have taken over the neighborhood in that particular area. And of course, the UK really clamped down on report what it was. But maybe it was one of those homegrown terrorists. I just don't see many people committing crimes of running through the back gardens of wherever it is. I think it was London, in a poor section, and lopping people's heads off. But that's what this guy did, and maybe that was what they've been talking about with these, are these lone, quote-unquote, lone wolves going to be sent out into the Western world and start lopping people's heads off, suicide vests, and things of that nature. Obviously, something's going to happen because the JV team that everyone thought that ISIS was in January is now going to get some spanking come Wednesday night when, the president announces what his plan is after meeting with all the heads of the Western world, in Wales over the last week.
Gary, from a psychology point of view, does it bother you that certain religious sects seem to have these tendencies?
Yeah, sure. I mean, yes, Simon, of course it does. It does that, I don't know if that's necessarily a psychological, although there's plenty of psychological issues as far as that goes. But, it's interesting, as I mean, listening to this, I'm no fan of ISIL, and I think that they're a very dangerous and horrid organization, but how many of these American, let's just say, since we're mostly a Christian country, Christians, and the NRA and the guns that we're trying to sell and the weapons that we sell to other countries, and how much blood do we have on our hands from Iraq and other areas like that? And I'm not a pacifist by any means, but it just wonders, if you want to look at numbers of how many gun deaths in the United States happened this year, and how many people died at the hands of ISIL? Even if you do the calculation for population, I would be I would bet that we have a lot more deaths here and a lot more killings. Now, Of course, the brutality is horrible, but that's part of the psychological warfare that people have to do to scare people. Right? Because when you're not very powerful, when you're not overwhelmingly powerful, you have to use terror. And that's the psychological part, is you have to use terror to scare people. We just kill people. We just will napalm them, or we will just do shock and awe, or we will just sell you, you know, assault rifles to carry around your back when you go to Walmart. So, it's a different idea. The idea of why we're so outraged, why the American public is so outraged, is because it's the blood and guts. You actually see the beef go into the slaughterhouse. And it's so disgusting, and we're so horrified by it. We like the packaged beef ready to put on a barbecue. And in the American position is we are a very bloodthirsty country. We just do it in a much more sterile way. We do it in a much different way than people who do these things, who cut off heads and put them on spikes and they actually terrorize us. You terrorize the population, and it's quite hard. So that's the psychological stuff. As far as the numbers and the misery they're calling, I'm not really sure that we are this, Christ was understood as the Prince of Peace, and we consider ourselves a Christian country. And I think that the American psychology, even with all the religion that we have, has really lost its way just as much.
Okay. Have you ever considered going into politics? that was a truly splendid answer. But
thank you. Well, who's going to vote for me, Simon? No one's going to vote for me.
But going back to the original question.
Go ahead.
Do you view politics as, sorry, not politics, religion as being a political tool?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, every candidate, more so on the right than on the left, but every candidate, for example, in our country has to go to Bob Jones University and kiss the ring. And you have to get, you have to, at least on the right these days, but it's on the left too, but it's just much more on the right, where you have to have these things about religion. You just simply cannot be agnostic or you can't be anything. I mean, of course, Obama's not very much a religious man at all, so maybe I'm wrong about that. But it has been hijacked. And again, we are the extremist, but just better packaged. The Christians are the American Christians, the American Jews, in a lot of ways, are very much extremist, but just much better packaged, much more well spoken, wearing a suit and tie. You know, when you go on Meet the Press or you go on anything like that, or you go on Face the Nation, who watches Meet the Press anymore? But when you go on Face the Nation, you know, and you see the head of Hamas in a suit and tie, he looks like a nice guy. You know, he looks like a nice person. He looks like a nice guy. But it's only when, you know, they're in their robes that we just get all freaked out over. But, yes, definitely, religion is some of the most religious people in our country have advocated vicious wars. And history, I mean, Sam will be able to speak to this, how many people have died in the name of religion.
I can't count that high. But a lot. No, and if you know, as you, Gary, you bring up a great point, but you know, let's even go back further in history. The Christians of today, if you think about it, yes, we package our war policies much prettier. We don't crucify people anymore. We just get them with a drone strike. It makes us feel better, right? But we're still killing them. You know, death is death. Well, you know, and the dead, and only the dead will tell you that there's no difference between how you die, and the dead will attest to that, right? In a war. But let's go back to the Crusades. How about all the people who rallied around, to save, the Muslim world back then, and when were just as brutal. to the Muslim world. Some of the ministers even killed some, even killed people who wouldn't participate in the Crusades, Jews or other people just want to go off and fight wars. They killed them, and they were brutal. When they were the Crusaders, you know, the Crusaders. I mean, a great name, but they were, you know, they were terrible. And if you, anybody wants to read a long novel that sums up what we're still going through right now, I urge you to pick up James Michener's *The Source*. And it parallels, you know, from the beginning of time all the way up to the, you know, 1960s when the book ends. The Seven-Day War. At that point, nothing's really changed. And I would go back to that book and just say, "Here's what he did. Everybody's been brutally killing each other, as you said, Gary, in the name of religion. Their religion, my religion's better than yours. Your religion's better than mine. Let's go kill each other over it." And here we are back again. And ISIS, I mean. When I see, Simon, did you get a copy of the CNN video that the United States government's putting out?
Oh, yes. I love it.
The social media. How about, that's how much the social media is now, where the U.S. government is actually putting out an anti-ISIS video that shows crucified people on it. I mean, I never thought in the year 2014 I'd be seeing people be crucified and stuck up on, stuck up on the cross to terrorize a... the local populace to do what they want. Yet that's what ISIS is doing. And, you know, and Gary, like you, I'm not an interventionist. I know what we've done. You know, not just in 04 and 08, since 9/11, and all the way up to now, we're doing airstrikes, and that seems to be working. But this ISIS, you know, don't forget, they're not just in Iraq. We're going to have to do something about them being in Syria too. That means we actually are going to become helpers of Assad. A guy who last year was gassing his people. I mean, it's a hot mess over there, and it has been for centuries. And it's going to be very interesting to see what the president and the other world leaders have come up with to combat this, because these guys are Al-Qaeda on steroids. They've got tons of money, which allows them to buy things. I mean, I still believe we should be doing an arms embargo on everybody. That's what I'd like to see done. Okay, yeah, I know, but we can't do that because we'd be hypocrites, because we're selling it to everybody too.
Right. Bill, did you get the video link that I sent you?
Yes, I did, and I watched it.
Yeah, and that was from the State Department. Did it scare you?
That scare me. What do you mean scare me?
Well, like, I mean, this is becoming a bit of a propaganda war, and it's not clear to me that the State Department really needed to publish that video. Oh, I could be wrong.
No, so the question of scaring is that why is it that the federal government had to publish that video, correct?
Right.
Yeah, it seemed really odd coming from them. It just seemed, that's the kind of thing you just pick up of YouTube or some of these other video sites. I didn't understand why they had to make the point. That's, you know, it's like nobody likes the government, so now they've set up their own YouTube site to try to sway us that maybe they do, you know, 1-2% of what they do is okay. Is that what it means? I don't know. Or is it to say that the United States government is not as bad as ISIS? Is that it?
Well, could be.
I think part of it, what I'm shocked about, not the video. I mean, I'm shocked, not the graphics of all that stuff. And I'm just shocked that Simon brought up the perfect word, propaganda war. ISIS has been able to use the social network, the social media, the internet, to recruit people from America, which we now know, and others. And Gary, this is what I want to talk to you about, being a psychiatrist. I was reading some reports over Labor Day weekend about the two boys from Minnesota who were killed. Fighting for ISIS in Iraq, and they came from broken homes, economic problems, you know, the usual suspects that lead kids to be lost in today's world. And ISIS is flying these kids, you know, getting a hold of them with recruiting videos, whether it's an American or British or whatnot, finding these lost, quote-unquote, souls, paying for them to get over to Somalia or someplace like that where they start training them. And then they believe they're part of something. And it's worked. It's worked. I mean, they have been able to get a hold of these kids who have nowhere to go, no job opportunities, terrible home lives, whatever it may be, you know, fill in the blank. And that's been recruited. That's what the recruiting videos been. And that's what the U.S. put an anti, trying to diffuse that thing. And that's what it was. Don't join them. You know, that's what I got out of that, watching that video, Simon, was don't join them. Look how bad they are. And to me, it's very interesting. But I think ISIS has made an incredible psychological move by expanding its base and getting out into Western world where many Muslims are. Just go to Europe, and they're lost. These kids, there's no jobs, there's no anything else. So, you know, why not? I remember. Did you see the video of the kid from Minnesota with his recruiting video back then? He said, "This is the real Disneyland. Come join us. Come join us here. This is Disneyland. This is the real Disneyland." These are the videos that they're making that are getting out there. And Simon, you would agree, I think, that ISIS's videotapes are well done, and they're brutal, but they're well done and well crafted, and they're getting out there, and they are getting recruits.
Yes, they are, and that disturbs me. I've heard it said that ISIS is worse than Al-Qaeda. And, yeah, I have to agree. I mean, Al-Qaeda just, you know, released silly tapes of some imam waffling on for 4 hours about God knows what. But ISIS are releasing really, really high production videos of beheadings. And You'll notice that they never show the actual event. It's the lead up that's the hook, and then they'll cut to black and then show the head. I mean it's brutal, it's horrible, but boy, they have a really, really good PR firm. I mean, awful. Absolutely awful. Sam, would you disagree with me?
No, I don't disagree. I mean, the PR firm, yeah, I mean, I don't know who's doing the PR for ISIS, but they're doing a great job. And I think the United States, just for the fact the United States even had to put out an anti-video, speaks to how ISIS is touching every base in modern warfare that you have to touch. Now, but let me add, because my son told me this, and I try to get inside information about warfare, you know, not from what I read. One of the reasons we've been successful at beating ISIS or holding their advance is they've overextended their lines. They don't have an air force. We have the best air force in the world. So their lines are overextended. So they're trucking, you know, that little country that they carved out of Syria and Iraq. It was easy when they were attacking little villages, little towns, and whatnot. Then they tried to take. Then they, as the tanks rolled and the cannon and artillery, they opened themselves up in the convoys for the air attack. So their initial success in the summer is now hurting them because they can't. Now they're retreating back into these villages and towns and whatnot, away from our air power. So, I mean, I don't know how Mr. Obama and the others are going to beat them if they're not going to put boots on the ground. I don't know how they're going to beat them. Because these guys are not going to be dumb the second time and put their asses out there for the United States Air Force to carpet bomb them, to, or the United States Navy to, you know, naval bombard them, you know, from wherever they're at. They're going to have to put boots on the ground, I mean, if you're going to beat them. Because these guys, like I said, are gonna, you know, they're gonna retreat back into the. They're not gonna leave themselves all in the open desert for our air force to annihilate them. So, but
right.
Again, the PR thing, I think, Simon, it's just amazing to me that they've got that. They've got oil money. They've got money buys everything. They've got gold, our gold. They've got weapons that they've taken over from us, our weapons, the weapons they bought, ammo. They've got troops. They've got public relations campaigns. They've got, they're paying for people to fly over to their areas to train. And they've got fighters. And it's going to be, it's a different sort of war. And, I hope we're ready for it. I hate to say it, that doesn't look good.
Bill, I don't know if you're aware of this. I watched a news program this morning, and the claim is that ISIS is cash rich, with the area that they do control. There's a lot of oil, and it's estimated that about $3 million a day is going into their coffers. Did you hear this?
No, but they seem to be exercising their muscles, flexing their muscles, just with their threat to Putin that said that after capturing their the MiG recently. I don't know if you read about that, but they said, we're going to come and take over. We're going to come and fight you on your soil. And the only way you can have the balls to say something like that is if you have enough money and you have enough fuel to be able to make that kind of a threat. And, they seem to be an organization who is very organized, and they take themselves seriously, and they aren't doing the kind of schlock things that you saw from other terrorist groups out there. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely correct. Let's go to Gary. Gary, $3 million a day. You can do a lot with.
Probably. I wanted to speak to the thing you said about before about the ISIL and their PR firm and all these things. When people get desperate and they get down and out, they turn to religion. You see that in prison quite often. You see that in the 12-step programs, where they've lost everything and they're feeling completely hopeless, and they turn to religion, whether it's Islam, whether it's Christianity, whether it's a higher power. And again, I'm not so freaked out over ISIL. I think that they'll be defeated. I think hopefully that the world will come together. Two things as far as that goes. What I am saying to you is that in our country, as the income inequality becomes more and more people feel they don't have a say in the world, more and more people, one of the things that's so wonderful about our country is it's like one man, one vote, and that's kind of what we feel. But instead, it doesn't seem to be that way anymore. It seems the Koch brothers have 500,000 votes, and I have one vote. And so, people say, well, I can't play by the rules anymore because the rules are not in my – the rules are already fixed. So then people go underground and people start revolutions and people start blowing up things. And I think that when things get so dire over here, it's just going to be a problem. The other thing is about all the oil and all that stuff. This should be a wake-up call to everybody. It certainly should be a wake-up call as far as Europe goes and as far as the Russian ability for gas and so forth. Europe has to go green. All of us have to go green. Even if you don't want to be, even if you want to be a dope and don't believe in climate change, you have to have national security. And this is why, if I were president, Simon, if I were president, I would say this is a clear and present danger. We are going to make our country completely carbon neutral, get off oil, anything that we can't produce ourselves. And that should be what Germany does. It should be what all of Europe does. And tell Russia to go screw themselves or anyone else because look at all the upset it has caused so many people. So it's a big problem. As far as the $3 million go, I don't know what that could buy. I'm sure it's not great, but when we're spending trillions of dollars or hundreds of billion dollars in our defense budget every day for tanks and aircraft carriers that we don't even need just to keep people employed, I don't know. It doesn't sound good. It's not a great headline, but I'm not sure.
Sam, how would you feel about earning $3 million a day?
Bro, doing it, writing books, and that way I'd love to. Doing it at the head of a terrorist organization, no thank you. But I think it's got to be more than that. I don't think you could run an organization the way they are on $3 million a day. I think it's like $30 million a day. I just think they got to play that down. But that's my own take on it. It's not surprising. I mean, they've learned lessons from, you know, Al-Qaeda. They've learned lessons from all the other, the Muslim Brotherhood. They've learned lessons from Hamas. You know, they've learned the lessons. Hey, you know, terror and we need money. They don't have to wait outside money. Like Hamas has to rely on the Emir Shmir to send them money and things of that nature. These guys are creating their own, and they have said so. They are creating their own country. And to create your own country, you have to have natural resources and money to do that. And that's what they're doing. They have a taxation settlement. They have the ransom. Look at the ransom money that they're requiring for people. But as my understanding, they have over 100 hostages, Western hostages. And France has been paying out through the nose. I don't know. You know, they kidnapped the Americans for the slaughterhouse, and they kidnapped the French for the money. But again, I mean, this is it's something that it's going to have to be dealt with. Unfortunately, with American treasure, probably American blood, probably other countries' bloods and treasures, because they have to be stopped. And Gary brings up a great point. If we were not dependent on foreign oil and not dependent on building aircraft carriers to keep people employed. Remember, not just the people who serve on the aircraft carrier, but the people who build it. Things would be a little bit different, but it's not that way. If you go back throughout history, heck, it's been like this since the Civil War. With war economies and people doing this, and instead of having elected people and terrorists, you had kings, queens, czars, and barons and baronesses and cheiks and all that. It really hasn't changed that much. The name tab, the slaughter mechanisms have changed, but it's the same thing throughout history. And we're right back there again. What was that great line? Those who forget history are doomed to repeat it, and here we are again. If you think about it, I'm the president. I'm not like those crazies who go, he called them a JV terrorist organization in a State of the Union or something like that. And maybe they were back then. Who knows? I don't think anybody saw that. Our own intelligence didn't see this coming. He wasn't doing that on his own. Our military didn't see it. We're a war-weary nation. No one saw it. We've been letting our guard down. I guess I'm more concerned that what happens, and you have to play the what happens game, or you shouldn't be involved in making a decision. But these guys are. What happens if we go on this major coalition to take out ISIS, and they really do have 1,000 lone wolves in America ready to strike? Or all over. I mean, they're just waiting. The two beheadings were a warning, right? So that was, hey, we're brutal. Stop. If you stop airstriking us, we just want to carve out we're going to kill each other. We're going to kill the people we want to kill. We're going to take over what we want. We're not interested in coming to your shores. But if you keep messing with us, this is what we're going to bring to you. So they killed two. That's their warning. Like Hitler wrote, I don't know why people are surprised about Adolf Hitler. He wrote everything he was going to do in Mein Kampf. Everything. Everything he said he was going to do, he wrote in Mein Kampf. So why were people shocked when all that stuff started to happen? And then when he got elected, he said he was going to still do the same thing. And people were shocked. Why are we shocked if we go take on ISIS, better be ready for the they better know that there are no lone wolves in this country. They better not, you know, there's a rumor going around down south, I've seen on the internet, that they have a, that as soon as we hit them, there's going to be a, they have a huge cell in Mexico that's going to come over the border. Because that's where the crossings are, right? That's an easy place to come on over. All the illegals have proven that.
Scary. Okay. Let's move on to a different issue. Oh, by the way, Sam, the Browns have perfect record.
Yes, they lost on the last second field goal. I know. My wife sent me a little note. She's a Steelers fan.
Well, let's talk about the border. Obama and immigration. He's decided to backpedal a little bit. You know, he came out in June, I think it was, you know, huffing and puffing, saying, well, Congress won't do anything. I'm going to do it through executive actions. And I believe it was Friday. He kind of said, oh, well, I've changed my mind. I'm going to wait till after the midterms to do anything. And, you know, in the hope that Congress might, you know, want to get on board. Politics? As normal or a sensible move? Gary, your thoughts?
It's probably a sensible move. I don't think it's a home run for him, though. You know, it's so absolutely disgusting what Congress has done for the last couple of years. I mean, it's basically historic. Anyone on the right that does anything with the president will lose his seat or lose her seat. So really, you just can't do anything. You can't make a deal. And again, when you talk about fundamentalism and you talk about extremism, you talk about the fundamentalist Islam, you talk about the fundamentalist Christians, the Jews, talk about fundamentalist politics. If you do anything with the other side, you are an infidel, you are a traitor, you are unworthy of holding office. Obama is doing what's only available to him. I don't think Obama, when he wanted to run for president, said to himself, I am so thrilled that I'm going to do executive orders, which, by the way, are way, way, way less than George W. Bush did. So the hypocrisy of all of this is insane. As far as the political calculation, they have a lot of smart guys in the DNC who are trying to figure this out. It just is absolutely disgusting how broken our political system is. I don't blame Obama one bit for wanting to do it on the back end of this. I'm sure once the elections are done, he's going to say, screw you, I'll do what I can, and that's all I can do. And it really is quite sad for our country.
Yeah, it bothers me, actually a great deal. I know the term is a lame duck, situation, but there's absolute gridlock in Washington. But they couldn't even agree on the brand of ketchup to be used in the staff canteen.
Yes, but Simon, this is not from the Democrats. This is only from the Republicans. Democrats were making deals even under George W. Bush. This is really, in the last 10 or 15 years, I've never seen anything like this, where in the Clinton White House, the Republicans were making deals. You got welfare reform done, all these things done.
You just cannot see it now on the right. Any kind of small agreement is Marco Rubio on his when he was someone talking about the Dreamers. I mean, Rand Paul's able to do it now, which is good for him. But other than that, it's like radioactive. You just can't agree with the White House or the Democrats. It's quite sad.
Oh, it's very sad. Bill, do you have any comments on this?
One of the interesting things that I'm not sure if it's confirmed or not, but they're talking that ISIS is looking at that United States-Mexican border as a great place for them to do some terrorist activity across our southern border. Now, I've seen it reported in Fox. It didn't sound to me like it was confirmed. It seemed like an awful lot of hype, but the question is if that is a reality, then that would explain on why they want it, why the president may have second thoughts about trying to keep that border open from getting all those immigrants through there. You know, you think that you're just saving children, but all you're doing is aiding and enabling a terrorist organization. Did you read anything about that that was credible?
I'm keeping an open mind on that. The most of the press is harping on the fact that some of these ISIS terrorists actually have either European or U.S. passports, so no visa required. Yeah, so why not fly in rather than swim across the Rio Grande?
Simon, could I chip in for a minute?
Sure.
One thing is Obama does not want to keep the border open. There are more people on the border now than ever. We have so many people, so many resources on the border, way more than under George W. Bush. He doesn't want to keep the and this is the rhetoric that people say, like, oh, Obama says, come on, the lights are all green, come on over. Not true. Number two, we always make these people bogeymen. We made Al-Qaeda this bogeyman that's going to destroy us and do all these things. There's not troops amassing on the border. And by the way, we cannot live in a sterile world. We will be hit again. Everyone knows this. Everyone knows this. There's going to be a bomb in a mall. There's going to be a bomb in a movie theater. It will happen. What we have to refrain against is this incredible overreaction that we did. The overreaction that the American public did to 9/11 is historic. It was a brutal attack, but to do what we did in that response, trillions of dollars and all this for that is insane. And here we are. We're talking about ISIL, and we're all getting afraid of some people who have guns and they're going to go what? They're going to kill a few people. Like I said, you can go into any kind of city right now in Chicago and anywhere, New York, Los Angeles. More people are going to die from the guns that the NRA pushes on us than anyone from ISIL is going to do to us.
Yep, that's a very valid point. But here's my question for you. The midterms are just around the corner. November the 4th, I believe, is the date. Just how much trouble are the Dems in? You know, I watched the Sunday talk shows, the talking heads, and everyone seems to be running scared. Dems are running scared. Republicans are, I won't say running scared, but not nearly as confident as they were 5 months ago. So, Gary, what do you see happening on November 4th?
It doesn't look good for the left. I you know, Simon, it's so funny. I just don't understand it. Our economy is doing great. Obama is getting coalitions that are going to be worldwide to help in the Middle East. We're relatively, aside from these things, not at war. Why are people clamoring for policies that are going to really economically try to help the super, super wealthy, that are going to damage our country? Why would Americans vote for the right? But then again, we just are a very dopey country, and we want to believe the rhetoric. And I don't understand why you want to vote for Mitch McConnell. I don't want to understand why you want to vote for these Tea Party candidates, for these extreme right, white right-wingers, who the people are going to vote them in are just people, blue-collar people who are making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year. It always numbs me. I just don't get it. You know, it's that book, What Happened to Kansas? I think it's called something like that. What's the matter with Kansas? About people who just vote against their interests. Sam Brownback, is he going to win for governor again? You know, he may. Everyone hates him, but he may. Sam Brownback, what did he do? He cut taxes like no one's business in Kansas. He was a poster child for the Tea Party conservatives, and Kansas is falling off a cliff. And yet, for a Democrat to win, it's almost impossible. It's just kind of mind-numbing, Simon. I just think that probably the Republicans will take over the Senate, which is kind of, again, mind-numbing.
Sam, similar question to you.
Well, first of all, I want to say a couple things.
With a twist, your good friend Rand Paul seems to be moving further and further to the right. I'm guessing he's looking at 2016, but I'm only guessing on that. So carry on.
Well, first of all, I want to add a couple things I didn't get to add. I think Obama is more focused. The border is such a hot mess that whether he does executive orders or get all tied up, and he's got to focus on ISIS right now. I mean, and then the border and all that, and, you know, there are governors down there. They do have National Guards. They do have their own stuff. We all know, you know, there's a lot of things going on. And I think he realizes for some bizarre reason, immigration and the idea of immigration reform is just going nowhere fast. And so why risk the political capital? So I think there's definitely a political move to see what happens in November. And then he might have to force something. Gary, I don't think the Pelosi Congress worked well with the George Bush thing. I think they did everything they could for political purposes only. And that's what happened. When they took over, when she was Speaker of the House, they did everything they could to screw around with Bush's program. Just like it's been going on since, you're right, since Bill Clinton. Whether you like Newt Gingrich or Bill Clinton, or you don't like them, one thing you have to say about them, they worked together. And they both left a legacy of a no deficit, a surplus in the kitty for the American taxpayers and everything, and they brought in some reform. Why Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton are vilified by both left and right is beyond me, because how do you argue with results? But the Pelosi-dominated House of Representatives blocked everything, not saying that they shouldn't have, but they did, and so is the Boehner thing. So it happens. And also, when you say the economy's great, yeah, for Wall Street. I don't know. I see a terrible economy out there. I see people losing more and more people not working 40-hour weeks, so the companies don't have to give them health care. That was not well thought out. I mean, it's too bad. That's happened. A lot of people falling through the cracks. Some of my students who I have, I'm in an inner-city school right now. And one thing I'll say about inner-city children, they are brutally honest. And when they tell me how bad things are at home, no one's working, no one can find jobs, and if they do, they're manual labor, things aren't going great. Now, they are going great for Wall Street, and they are going great for government workers, but for everybody else, I mean, it's still the Great Recession. That's my opinion. Rand Paul moving to the right, I agree with Gary. You want to be the Republican nominee for president, you have to go to Bob Jones University. You want to be the Democratic nominee for the president, you have to run as a peacenik, you know, like Obama did. He ran to the left of Hillary Clinton and beat her brains in. And obviously he's not as lefty as some people think he is, or Democrats think he is. I still have Democratic friends who scream bloody murder that Guantanamo is still open. You know, and by the way, I do want to say something. The first person ever to do the ice bucket challenge was Dick Cheney to the Guantanamo prisoners. Get it? So, that being said, I think that this is going to be a purely I think it's going to be close. I think that it's going to be who gets out their base. The Democratic base just isn't fired up. I do not know why, and I don't know why because of what I just said. The economy sucks. Wall Street's making killings. No one went to jail for what they did over Wall Street. Fines are being levied against these corporations left and right, and none of the money is going to the people who are the victims. It's going back to the government coffers. It's happening under the Obama administration, the Obama Justice Department, and happening to the Bush administration and the Bush Department of Justice. Yeah, they fine these companies, rightfully so, billions and billions of dollars, but the people who they screw don't get any of the money. They pay a government fine that goes into the general fund. I mean, it's one big happy family for the rich corporations, the rich individuals, and the government. And I think what's happening is people are just, it's going to be a very low turnout. Whoever gets the base out is going to win. I think if the Democrats lose the Senate, shame on them. So, I mean, they didn't write the right candidate. They didn't see what's going on, and that'll be their fault. It is so hard to beat an incumbent. And I will say this, Gary, Mitch McConnell's bad, yeah, but they beat the Tea Party candidate. The Republican establishment beat all the Tea Party candidates except the one state, I believe. I can't remember what state it is. Maybe Simon can remember. But most of the Tea Party candidates who took on the incumbent Republicans got their brains beat in the primaries. So the moderate, the status quo of the Republican Party beat off the... Oh, it was Eric Cantor. Eric Cantor was the only a guy to lose to the Tea Party. And where did he land? Wall Street. Gee, what a surprise.
Oh, indeed. So, Bill, you've been kind of quiet. Any thoughts on what's going to happen in the midterms?
I don't think I have anything different than Sam has expressed. Again, the only thing I really wanted to chime in on, and even Sam hit this one for me, is that the economy is still crappy. It is really, really bad. Maybe Los Angeles is doing phenomenal, and that's why Gary seems to think that the economy is doing good, but it's not. In the statistics for the state of New Jersey, 30% of the population are living below poverty level. So that's not good. So the reason the Democrats are not going to make it at this coming election is because the economy. The Democrats have always been so focused on helping the economy and everything else, and yet the common can't get back to work. There are kids that are really smart out there that graduated, they can't get jobs, and... of course. So that's what's hurting the Democrats. They focused on all kinds of other things that they, promised that they, they promised to take care of the joblessness and to work on developing jobs in the United States. And they've gotten distracted in other things, and they're just blockheads with the Republicans, and they haven't done their job.
Let me just say one thing in my defense. I think Sam and Bill are probably, they actually made good points, and I wasn't, I think, upon reflection of hearing both of them, I wasn't very eloquent in what I'm saying. I agree with both Sam and with Bill on this. I am saying, when Obama came into office and where we are now, the idea of something being the economy that we've been used to is just not possible. And I think the deficit has gone down tremendously. And I think the unemployment rate was in the nines. It's now in the low sixes. I understand some of that's due to low interest rates and so forth. But at the end of the day, it's not so horrid. It's just it's a lot better than when he came in. And then the Republicans, and, you know, it's funny because you have not heard a peep from the right about Obamacare. You haven't heard one thing. Because why? Obamacare has been a tremendous success. It's lowered health care costs. It's done all these things. Going forward, it's going to be seen as a tremendous success, not as good as universal health care, which we should have had. But just, and this isn't a liberal schmiberal thing. This is just basic dollars and cents.
Jerry, the far right loves, the far right that controls corporate profits, they love Obamacare.
I'm sure I've always thought that it would make a lot of money. All I'm saying is that
they don't have to pay. They don't have. Everyone's working 35-hour weeks now, so they can't have to pay health care.
Not everyone is working 35 hours a week. That statistic is much less than people thought it was.
Minimum wage people are. Minimum wage people are.
Well, fair enough, but it's much less than people were touting. It's much less. All the hyperbole on the right about Obamacare was going to do this and that, it just never happened. In fact, the opposite happened. And so what you hear from the right is
the corporations love Obamacare. They've been able to cut costs. They've been able to cut benefits. That's what I'm trying to say.
What you hear from the right is basic silence on the idea of Obamacare now. That's just what I'm saying. I'm saying all the things that the right was screaming about, 50 votes to repeal Obamacare. It was going to destroy our country. Now, Sam, you're making a point. Oh, corporations love it. No, it was supposed to destroy our country.
That was just not happening. The Koch brothers and all those people, all those Wall Street billionaires and millionaires, they loved it. Now and anybody who owns a fast food restaurant or a chain of them or this or that, their CEOs are making more money than they have ever made. They have more employees working for them than paying less. They're paying minimum wage, and they don't have health care, which means guess who has health care? My favorite is the McDonald's. You know, and I think I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. McDonald's has a corporate hotline called McResource. So you get hired by McDonald's at 38 hours a week. You don't get Obamacare. You don't get health care. You call up McResource, the McDonald's 1-800-McResource. They find out what state you're living in. They set you up with welfare. They set you up with food stamps. And they set you up with Medicaid. So that's the real screw job that's going on in this country right now for everybody. And the government, both parties, the Senate, the Congress, the President, the corporation, Wall Street, are all in bed together about it. And that's why the economy stinks so bad, because people, the middle class, are paying for it both ways. They're paying for it in their tax dollars to help fund a welfare system to subsidize super multi-billionaires. That's what we do. You think about that. The Waltons, they're all worth $50, $60 billion apiece. The average worker makes $8.75 an hour and is on welfare. And we're subsidizing their workers with welfare. And that's got to stop. And until all that stuff stops, and along with, you know, the economy is never going to get better. You're right, Gary. You said it's a different economy today than it was when Bush was. And it is better in some respects. But it's changed so much because the corporations and big business have stuck it to the American people so many ways because they make more. The CEOs, the CFOs, the shareholders, the stockholders, they demand it. And it's coming on the back. And that economic, we're all economic slaves. I am amazed at what's going on out there and how it continues to get worse for the average American, not better. And I don't think it matters who the president is. It's because of how much money these robber barons are making nowadays. That's what's going to stop.
Okay. Sam, you're obviously all riled up. So
yeah,
let me rile you.
That thing about I can't stand. Yeah.
Now, let me rile you up some more.
Okay. It's Sunday. I want to have a nice glass of wine afterwards. Calm down.
Okay. Let's talk about Israel.
All right.
I understand that they've just made a 1,000-acre land grab on the West Bank. I think that's outrageous, and so does everyone else.
I'm not aware of this, so I really can't comment on the exact situation, but it doesn't surprise me. They just beat the snot out of them. And they're going to, they probably did it for, I'm assuming for security reasons, for a bigger buffer zone, and they're going to squeeze Hamas to get get out of that, the Palestinian, government there. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, that had to have been agreed upon in this ceasefire deal that they cut. They must have known it was coming. They had to have. I mean, I don't think they would have done that unless Egypt knew about it. The Palestinian Authority knew about it, and because there haven't been any rockets being fired. I don't know the details of it, but
no,
it's like a new
settlement.
Okay. And they're going to build what for everybody, what can you tell me more about it?
It's somewhere close to a place called Etzion, which I know nothing about.
Yeah, I don't know the details, but I know maybe there's not much land there, and obviously they thought they could do it, so they did it. I mean, the West Bank is. It's the subplot of what we talked about earlier with ISIS. It's been going on for centuries, and Israel obviously feels that it's in the catbird seat right now, and did it. I just hope it doesn't become home to the fanatics like Maya Kahani and those guys, because they're the ones who view that area as the holiest of holy sites. And that's one of the biggest problems. It seems like every country in every country in the world has their fanatic left and their fanatic right, and they don't care what they do. It's just selfish and narcissistic means for themselves, and they don't care. The rest of the world be damned. And Israel has them too with that Maya Kahani. I think he still has they're still around, and that they can be a problem. I think they're the ones. Followers of his were the ones who kidnapped that Palestinian boy and set him on fire after the three Israeli boys were killed. It just goes on and on and on,
Okay. So, Sam, it's okay for Israel to
They grabbed it. The West Bank is theirs. They took it. They won it in the war. So, I mean, should we get back Texas to the Mexicans? Or maybe we should. Right?
Yeah.
We took
and they can take Ted Cruz
Russia, I don't know if Sarah Palin... I got a great one to make Gary laugh. Let's give Alaska back to the Russians, and Sarah Palin won't be able to... Kakama won't be so dumb anymore, right? But that's the way the world's been for the years. And when I read the history books, you win in war, you take what you... To the victors go to spoils. I mean, let's give the Dutch back Manhattan.
Sure.
And all that other stuff. How about let's give the Dutch East Indies back to whatever. I got a better one. Let's give America back to the Native Americans.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah, okay. So it doesn't surprise me. I mean, that's the way they are. I believe Israel came out of this last war stronger and in a better position, and obviously they said, hey, we're going to do this, and, to the victors go to spoil. And, that's what's happened. And, I think the Hamas is lucky that the Egyptians broke the ceasefire, because right now there would be Israel would be in total control of the Gaza Strip right now. Total. There'd be a lot more dead.
Okay. But we started the program talking about Ukraine and land grabs by Putin that everyone views as being a bad thing, and yet now we're talking about Israel and a measly 1,000 acres of land. But isn't it a land grab?
It's their land. They want it in the 67-day war. It's not a land grab. You know, I mean, and also, Russia, if you think about it, this is the Russian separatist, and they voted to become part of Russia. They care. Now, Ukraine didn't recognize that vote. So, I mean, you know, was it a legal election? I don't know. I didn't talk to Jimmy Carter. He didn't call me because he didn't observe it. I don't know. But that's what they wanted. They don't want to be a part of Ukraine anymore. I mean, it's my understanding, Gary might be able to speak on this better, aren't there people who want to break California up into three states or something? You know, I've read stuff about that. You know, I mean, it happens. I mean, you can legally do some of these things according to own country's charters or state charters or whatnot. I'm surprised it hasn't happened more, but because of the money thing, it doesn't. So you know,
okay.
Ukraine is fighting, to keep that, you know, that part of their country Ukrainian, and the Russians, you know, they want, as you said, Simon, strategically and whatnot, and they're financing the effort. With Israel took over the West Bank in the Six-Day War, along with the Golan Heights, and along with the Sinai Peninsula, and someone else. The Golan Heights is still, would protect them from Syria, which had invaded them from the Yom Kippur War, right? That is still, Israel runs it. It's still called the Golan Heights, but, you know, if Israel wanted to extend into there, they could, and they probably will now that ISIS has control of that border crossing. And where they almost killed the 42 Filipino UN peacekeepers. So, I mean, you know, you got to protect your security.
Okay, but Sam, you're using strange arguments here.
I don't think so.
No, I knew you were going to say that.
I mean, how do you say? Are you telling me that the West Bank belongs to who? Who does the West Bank belong to? I believe it belongs to Israel because, quote unquote, they won it in a war. They were invaded, and once again in 67, and they defeated the Arab forces that controlled it, that attacked them, and to protect themselves and to open up settlements and to have border security and all those things, they did that. That's their land. I mean, let someone, you know, I mean, you know, I'm sure they could produce a deed signed by Moses, too, if you need it.
Okay. ISIS, or ISIL, whatever you want to call them, they've taken over Mosul. So could these two items be attached? Yeah, if ISIS wants to take over a town, it's fine.
If ISIS is taking over town, let's look at it this way. If ISIS attacked Iraq, right, and Syria, they wanted to create a Muslim, ninth century Muslim state. Is that correct? Religious state.
Right.
Am I right? Okay.
Yep.
That's what they said they were going to do. That's what they're doing. Okay, when Israel comes in to take over the West Bank, they're going to build housing settlements, schools, playgrounds, build factories, things like that to put people to work, and things of that nature. ISIS comes into a community and they behead people and they crucify people and they force people to live in that. They're not really. I think it's a real bit bad compare contrast, but I'd like to hear what the rest of the panel has to say.
All right. Yeah. Oh, okay. Who wants to jump in? Gary?
I don't know about the thing, Simon, but it's really, you know, it's really interesting when we're living in America to say it's a land grab. I don't make equivalence between the democratically elected Israeli government and the Muslim world. I just don't. I just think they're different. And it's a very complex thing as far as security goes and water rights and things like this. When people talk about that Ruth walked on this land like 5,000 years ago, I think it's insane and it makes me crazy. You know, the basic truth is, Simon, that if, I've said this many times on this program, that if Hamas had Israel's army, and Israel had Hamas's army. Israel would be occupying Tel Aviv right now. And that's just Hamas would be occupying Tel Aviv. So I don't know if it's a land grab. I don't know what the long-term solution, why the Israeli government is doing this. I do know that unless, like in America, unless the population, the 300 or so million, say we can't do this anymore, we're not going to let these few 500 billionaires, multi-billionaires, rule our country, and we rise up against it, or the Muslim world rises up against the extremists, I don't know what's going to happen. In the meantime, thank God that, you know, we have a powerful country in many ways. Thank God Israel has a powerful military. Let Israel do what it needs to do. I mean, if we being bombarded by Mexico the way Israel was bombarded by Hamas, we would just take over 100 miles going south. And we would just do that. And we would just put 500,000 landmines there and say, get the fuck away from us. So, you know, it's easy to point fingers, Simon, but Israel is like the size of, like, you know, one third of California, if less than that. It's like it's a sliver of land. And just imagine what you would be saying if Mexico was raining bombs down on Mississippi. We would just bulldoze 100 miles of Mexico, and we wouldn't think twice about it.
Oh, actually, I think it'd be better to bulldoze Mississippi, but, oh, I shouldn't say that. Bill, do you have any comments on this subject?
It is so confusing because it's obviously we do a better humanitarian forceful takeover of whatever it is that we step into, because if you ask our government, they will tell you that we do it the more humanitarian way. ISIS and Russia don't really have any clear humanitarian purposes for taking over somebody else's land. You know, I hope you understand that this is all tongue-in-cheek. Is it the ends justify the means? It doesn't really matter how you take over the land. If you're better at the appearance of doing, of taking over something, then that makes it better. You know, I mean, it's obvious there is such a good reason for us to stay out of other people's business, but clearly they don't seem to be able to govern themselves sufficiently enough. Not that we can govern ourselves either, but somebody has to call people on their lack of human dignity when they make these kind of decisions. You know, how do you stay out of other people's business when they're doing the atrocities like the crucifixions and everything? And how do you stay out of that and say that just let them work on their own border disputes? Because if you do, then, you know, you got the same thing that went on with, you know, Hitler and the Nazis and the Jews and all that all over again. So, you know, where is our ethics got to be above board, and where do we need to keep our nose out of other people's business? That's really the crux of how do you answer these questions.
Right. Okay. Let's move on to a different subject. And this subject, I'm pretty certain, will get Gary and Sam's interest. Sam, as a teacher, have you heard of an internet phenomena known as Slender Man?
Yes.
Okay. How about you, Gary?
Yes, I have heard about it. It's some kind of cartoon, think something or the other that's killer, but you could enlighten me a little bit.
Okay. It's an online cartoon stroke e-book stroke blog that young people like to go to. I guess Slender Man really started on May 31 of this year when two 12-year-old girls in Wisconsin stabbed their classmate 19 times. And when questioned, they said their reason was reading Slender Man. Now, Slender Man struck again a couple of days ago. 14-year-old Florida girl, Lily Marie Hartwell, set her house on fire, while her mother and 9-year-old brother were sleeping inside. Reports suggest that Lily's mother had asked her to clean her room earlier that night. Propelled by anger and the Slender Man mentality, she set it, just lit the place alight. Luckily, mother and brother managed to get out safely. Here's my real question. Should there be some sort of internet censorship, shall we say? Yeah, things like Slender Man seem to be having a bad effect on our youth. Gary, your thoughts?
Well, let me ask you a question, Sam. I want you to ask me a question, okay? Ask me why I go to the strip club 3 nights a week.
Okay, why do you go 3 nights a week?
Because they have free chicken wings. Now, that's why I go to this club, right, Sam? I mean, right, Simon? So if you ask me why I do something, I will always give you a reason. If you ask me why I punch my wife in the face, it's because she burns my steak. And so what the point I'm saying is that there's always a reason why people will always give you a reason why they do something. This girl, this obviously very sick and disturbed girl, burns down the house because she said she saw something on Slender Man. Well, you know what? There's about 10 million other girls who didn't do anything when they read Slender Man. So, you know, I'm not sure. And again, this is part, I think, of our problem. Now, we can make the case that would our world be better if we didn't have, you know, all kinds of, you know, weird pornography and Islamic sites online and stuff like that. That actually may be worth debating. But I think Americans in general were so freaked out about anything bad happening that we really want to, wear, like, antibacterial suits and have cameras everywhere and walk around with AK-47s on our back because we're terrified. So I don't know if these three examples of these very sick girls means that this should be taken down. Probably what is, Worlds of Warcraft and all these other things and all these kids shooting things. I honestly don't know, Simon, of
all, you know, we are a very bloodthirsty country. We are just a very violent country. And so I honestly don't know if this is, if the three represents something that's significant. My guess is probably no. So based on what you're telling me, I'm not sure our kids are in danger. There are three broken girls, and they maybe just used the Slender Man as a platform to explain why they did what they did.
And Sam, you're a teacher, so
yep.
You interact with kids all the time. I know you've heard of Slender Man. I'd love to know what your thoughts are.
Well, I don't. I know of Slender Man, and I don't know a lot of the details because most of the kids I work with are inner city kids, and they're lately, and they. I think Slender Man is more of a suburban. I may be wrong on that because the kids I work with don't. They're more into talking about, you know, hip hop, and they're actually not more into like a Slender Man blog or something like that. They might be. I'm not aware of it, but they're more into. Up-to-the-date stuff, you know, the entertainment, sports, mecha industry, that's what they focused on, you know. And probably just being the most of them live in the ghetto, they're probably just trying to get a hot meal and stay alive and make ends meet, and it's pretty important, too. So they probably don't have time to go and Slender Man or do all that. So that's my own take. Does that mean, as Gary pointed out, maybe some of them do, and they don't get the same sort of reaction, a violent reaction or horrific action that these other people did. Obviously, hundreds of thousands of other kids deal with Slender Man, and they don't react violently. So it's just one of those things. I think it's just an excuse that they came up with. Hey, let's got to blame someone, you know, and point the finger. So blame
right.
it on, blame it. You know, obviously, you know, you think about it, they were 12 years old, right? They go and stab a classmate. I mean, that's just not normal behavior for 12-year-olds. So they had to blame it on someone. They got caught. I mean, who knows if they wouldn't have got caught, they wouldn't have blamed it on anybody, right? You ever think of that?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what the, you know, Slender Man made me do it. You know, I mean, I always reminded of that great scene from Jaws when they're looking for the shark and they find the fin sticking up, and it turns out to be two kids playing a practical joke, and the one kid has turned to the other guys have guns pointed at him, and they're pulling the kids out of the water, and he looks at the other kid, and he goes, he made me do it. You know, you're right there, you're a willing participant, you know. So you have to blame somebody, even though you got caught. You know, so that's what happened, so.
Bill, any thoughts on Slender Man?
Nothing new. Just, you know, like Sam says, you're just going to blame somebody for getting caught. And in this case, it seems to be popular in their situation to come up, you know, to pull this name out of their ass because Slender Man made me do it. It's like, Slender Man told me, and it's like, you know, it's just a convenient excuse, you know. They've got some issues. They got some real family issues that aren't getting resolved, and you have to blame it on somebody else instead of taking ownership for your own actions.
Yeah, that's actually a very good response. Okay, Sam, one for you. Completely different subject. The NFL. You know, which I know you love, even though the Browns lost today.
Yep.
Michael Sams, he got cut. Was that all just a PR move?
Well, no, he got picked up by the Dallas Cowboys. He's on the practice squad.
Ooh.
I only know that because my youngest son works for Sports Illustrated, and he gets a lot of, he sends me all sorts of interesting information about the mundane stuff in the sports world. Because he does the social network for Sports Illustrated, the Twitter, the Facebook, and the apps. So he gets stuff sent to, when I saw him on Labor Day weekend, he puts his phone down. It's like a Mexican jumping bean because his phone's hooked up to the wires at Sports Illustrated. Whenever something happens in any sport, he gets an automatic text message. So he has to really understand what's going on, because he then has to decide what goes on the Twitter account, what goes on the Facebook page, and all that. So I always get little interesting tidbits like that. So he told me that he got picked up by the Cowboys, and Dallas, Jerry, they're the most, the team hasn't been what it used to be. It was probably a great PR move for the Dallas Cowboys. He did show that he could play. I mean, he played in a preseason game against the Browns, and he sacked Johnny Football a couple times. He looked pretty good doing it. But I think the big problem was one of his. I'm going to go on what my son says, because he knows more about this than I do, and he's young. The biggest problem was ESPN with Michael Sams, because every day, every hour, they had a Michael Sams watch, and then there was this thing: why is Michael Sams being picked up? What's wrong? What's going on in the locker room there? So there was all sorts of crazy, much for the mind questions that ESPN was making a big deal out of Michael Sams being gay. And I think it really started to become a distraction for the Rams, and that's why they cut him. And because my attitude is, okay, if I own the football team, if I own the San Francisco 49ers or the New York Jets or Giants or maybe the Chicago Bears, which I'm going to assume have the largest gay populations in America, why wouldn't you have Michael Sams on your team? I mean, I just don't understand. Look at the marketing. I mean, I just don't understand that. But I guess there must be a distraction for NFL teams, because the guy can play. I mean, he's not some a terrible football player. He is good. The fact that he's on a practice squad is pretty good, gay or not gay. I just thought of the marketing tools for him to be like on the 49ers. Why wouldn't the 49ers have him on the practice squad? You know what I mean? But I guess that's all. I guess the distraction is not worth it.
Okay, we're almost flat out of time, but there's one last subject that I want to get the panel's opinion on. It's a hot news. It involves a lady by the name of Jennifer Ann Whalen, age 39, of Washington, Pennsylvania. She was sentenced on Friday after pleading guilty to performing an illegal abortion. Now, there's more to this story than meets the eye. She bought some miscarriage-inducing pills from a European drug firm after her 16-year-old daughter had become pregnant. So she gets 18 months in jail, fined $1,000, and ordered to perform 40 hours of community service after her release. There's an issue that I have with this. Surely Plan B can be bought over the counter. I'm not quite sure why they're throwing the book at Jennifer Whalen. Any ideas, Gary?
Well, look, the only thing I could think of, it's basically the Christian. Is there a lot of noise going on right now, Simon? Hello?
Hello?
Did you hear me? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The only thing I could think about, it's kind of like the Christian Taliban. And it's kind of what's happening right now in right-wing politics, where all kinds of abortions are outlawed. And, look, it's easy to point fingers at what's going on in other countries with the crazy religious people. We're not that far behind them. It's just, like I said, we just packed it up a lot better. But, yeah, send someone to prison for social things. If someone wanted to have an abortion, then someone did it to put this person insane. It's very disappointing. It's what you get when you have extreme religious positions. Christian, Judaism, Muslim, it's always a problem.
Do you have any thoughts on this, Bill?
I don't know. I read the story. I didn't realize how religion came into this, but apparently Gary seems to know more about this. I'm really surprised that she could not find a place that would perform the abortion. It wasn't probably my first choice to deal with a situation like this, but not having any girls in my family, and I'm not sure how to look at this. It doesn't seem like it was enough. If something's illegal, you need to pay the fine. If you get caught, that's just how it is in America. But I don't know. again, the girl got sick, and it seemed kind of problematic for the parent to kind of endanger her daughter, apparently, with the day after abortion pills. So, that's just a problem with medicine in general to try to fix something like this. I don't know. I guess I haven't said a hell of a lot.
And Sam, do you have any thoughts?
I don't. I don't. Did anybody find out did the girl get what she raped? What she this? What she that? Was the baby going to ruin their life economic? I mean, there's so many issues that take place. I was 16 years old when I got my 15-year-old girl friend pregnant. It was the best thing we did that we could have a legal abortion. Because I was not ready to have a kid. I was ready to have sex, but I wasn't ready to have a kid. Neither was she. That child would be so screwed up right now, if that would have happened. And all our lives would have changed differently. It was the best decision made then, for me, my girlfriend at that time, and that unborn child. That's it. I shudder to think what would have me as a father at age 16. It made me crazy. But that aside, I always think there's so much that goes into each story, as it always does. I mean, for people, to me it's always like, I want to be rich and famous. Well, so did Robin Williams, and look what it did to him. It's just money doesn't buy you happiness. There's such a story to reasons for what happened, and I don't know that, so I don't know the particulars of it, but I could see why a mother wouldn't want to have a 16-year-old child have a baby. I totally relate to that from my own personal view, and of also being a father and also being a teacher. How many kids I had to see drop out because they have kids? It ruins everyone's lives. And, and therefore I'm a big believer in, abortion, I think it's another thing that the government, it is legal, it has been legal versus Roe versus Wade, and people ought to leave it alone, because who's going to take care of all these babies? I've never understood that, and for the people on the far right who don't want government in our lives, why do you keep trying to make the government decide that people get pregnant, they have to have babies? I just never could understand that. And again, mine's a personal experience and this and that and that. But again, as a teacher in the inner city and a teacher in some of the richer suburbs, too, that when I was a substitute teacher last year, some kids had to drop out because they got pregnant. And they didn't want to have the babies. Now, people forced them to have the babies. It's my belief. I think they're better off to have an abortion. Unless they want to, and that child can be brought up in a decent, fair, wonderful home, which is very difficult to do. That's that. So I need to know more about the details before I could really comment. But you know what my overall viewpoints are.
Okay. All right. And as said, we're flat out of time. Going to go once around the table to get everyone's parting thoughts. Gary, I'll start with you. Any words of wisdom for us?
I think I'm all wisdom now. The best early on, and then I think I was a little stumble a little bit later on, a little bit better. So that was it. I hope you guys have a nice week, and hopefully I'll be able to check in next week, and we'll go from there. You guys be well.
You bet. You have a great week. And,
all right, thank you.
And Bill?
Yeah. Looking forward to a pleasant week in Jersey with all the kids back in school, and hopefully people will drive a little better than they've been with the opening of school. They were had a chance to be crazy drivers during the summer, and now they need to watch out for all of our young children out there on the road. So everybody have a great week, and take care now.
And Sam?
Well, I want to thank you guys for this because it's, my lawsuit that I'm a pro se plaintiff, against seven lawyers is heading to mediation, and I've been up into my eyeballs trying to go through all the discovery and whatnot to present a case, so hopefully I can have a settlement. Doing homework assignments and checking grades and all that, too. So this is such a blessing for me. Now it's my escapism. I want to thank you for entertaining me and inviting me on the show and doing some talk. And I want to end it with this. The Donald Sterling fallout has begun. Today it's announced that the Atlanta Hawks owner is selling his team for a racist email that's 2 years old that he sent out to his vice president and general manager about the difference in white fans and black fans. And that, so the Donald Sterling fallout is just beginning.
Ooh, yes. I did
talk
read
about that.
That.
Next, there'll be a story next week to talk about.
Oh, indeed. And we shall. And
great.
On that note, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy and safe week. We'll be back again next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.